Hello and welcome to TOVG after a week hiatus in which we were giving thanks for all the wonderful lives we lead sitting around in our underpants playing video games for a living, right guys?
Yes. Yeah.
Welcome to the Thanks of the Giving podcast. That's what it stands for.
We have come back after yes, as is usual. We have Jimmy and Matt, as usual. I've been making the rounds. Hopefully I can bring back some interesting people on here. But not to imply that
enough.
You're not in, no, I was about to say that I don't want to imply
it's
that you're
late.
Not
it was too late. Time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I did at least one thing that was kind of sort of interesting over Thanksgiving. And that is, while I was at my mom's house away, I started a replay of Earthbound on an emulator on my cell phone.
You pirate. You dirty thief.
I had a cartridge when I was a kid.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm completely fine with that. Continue.
And it's still funny, but I have a... It's a hell of a lot harder than I remember.
Really?
Yeah, I played it, I guess, a couple years ago, fairly recently, but I guess I was abusing the save states back then because, like, woo. It's you walk into a new area and the level curve is set up that so you just get steamrolled.
I haven't played it, so I wouldn't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Earthbound's super interesting because it's a... RPG that was kind of made for like beginner kids at the time. There was some super hardcore stuff coming out, and within franchises like Ultima and Final Fantasy to a degree, but Earthbound has a much more simpler system, but the difficulty is still like 90s level, a little bit unreasonable.
Oh God!
So the problem with that is that the game's so simple that you don't really have a lot of strategies to counteract the difficulty besides just getting EXP, which means you just end up grinding. And it's
Hooray.
Super weird that this like kid-friendly, beginner-level, charming, cult classic, Charlie Brown-looking JRPG still has the same problem that like the gritty-ass, super wordy... kind of pretentious, philosophy-heavy 90s Final Fantasies did. Where you have to take a break from the story and enjoying yourself to do this incredibly abstract video game thing of walking around to farm random encounters until your numbers get high enough for the real encounters.
Yeah, I mean, like, as far as grinding goes, I've always... I don't know. I guess I'm realizing these days that grinding is a... It's a weird thing just because, like, when you have levels and stats attached to them and such, it just feels like you... I mean, obviously it's more work, but you can just, like, over-level and then wipe the floor with whatever, and then that takes away the stakes from boss fights and big encounters and makes them less interesting or, you know... It just takes away the stakes. Like, it's less... I don't know.
And especially if there's no... The difficulty curve in a lot of RPGs is upside down.
Right, and so, like, if, I don't know, it, I feel like it's very hard to find what is the middle ground, like, the point where you're supposed to be when you enter a new area, I guess.
Yeah. I'm guessing what developers have to do is make sure that enemies don't output much EXP when you out-level them, but... they do output more EXP when you're under like the EXP you get from an enemy in a lot of games may actually be variable on your level in order for them to keep you challenged in a certain area. But I don't think that's the case in a lot of games. It's really hard because I love RPGs to death, but I don't like paying attention to the numbers in them.
Yeah.
Which is funny because it's literally one of my favorite things to do is just like sit down and open a beer and enjoy a good, delicious, deep RPG, which is all about throwing around numbers. But micromanaging it is a level that I've always been interested in, but never really gotten my hands dirty with.
Right.
I'd like to know how they manage it.
Yeah, I would imagine that setting up an RPG system with stats and creatures for every area, et cetera, must be a very difficult task.
In another level, it actually plays really well on a phone, which makes me think. What were you about to say?
I was just going to say, it doesn't surprise me. Like, I think the easiest genre to adapt to a phone setting is RPG.
Because you can just wait your turn for however long you want.
Yeah, because I mean, like, it wasn't it in Mother 3 that they added those kind of rhythm elements to the combat, right? Wasn't there a thing like that?
Well, there's technically a little bit of it in Mother 2 with the HP rollers. But
it wasn't in Earthbound, is what I'm saying.
No, not necessarily. Like the lightest little progenitor of it is there. There's a tiny little element of real-time menu mashing that you have to do at higher levels if a character gets hit for a lot of damage, but very, very rarely do you have to worry about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, in that sense, what I'm saying is, like, that's why ports of other genres, action genres, unless they're, like, one-button endless runners or something, don't really work out too well on the phones, whereas RPGs are clearly just, like, they work better because they're slow-paced, and clunky phone controls don't really get in the way as much.
You can accidentally mash the part of the screen you didn't want to mash, and it'll be okay.
Right.
And that made me think for a second that maybe Nintendo could have some strategy just flat out releasing ports for slower games on cell phones if they wanted to do the cell phone route, which they do want to do. But as we will find out later in this podcast, that's not the case at all.
Ooh, foreshadowing.
I don't know if that's going to make people happy or sad or not. I mean, the whole situation of there being Nintendo games on the cell phone is something that I think a lot of people took harshly, but I was having enough fun playing Earthbound on a cell phone over the Thanksgiving break that I could have closed my eyes and pretended. I would have, you know, rather actually downloaded an official one from the App Store instead.
Right.
Just because it plays really well on a phone.
Yeah, I actually, like, kind of going against what I said earlier, there was one game that I emulated on an old Android phone that I had before that played really well, and that was Legend of Zelda, the Oracle's games. Yeah.
Because they get a little twitchy.
But not so much. The older top-down Zeldas really don't require too much from you, maybe in the boss fights and stuff, but I was able to get through a couple dungeons pretty much no problem, never really being affected by the phone itself, just my own skill, you know? So, I don't know. I wouldn't mind if we got some phone Nintendo games. Like, I know people are always like, oh, Nintendo just remakes and re-releases and whatever, but there's 10-year-old kids these days playing on iPhones who have never heard of a Nintendo Entertainment System, and I would like them to experience these old-ass games. Like, if they had the chance, if it was, $1 to $5 to play, what have you,
Mother
Zelda
One
or something, Mother One. Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know.
Matt, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been dabbling into a little bit of a Little Big Planet with my wife. That's been pretty fun. I've been playing mostly Just Cause. Cause 3. And
yes, that's supposed to be a big deal, right?
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing. I didn't know it was a big deal. I played the first one years ago, and I enjoyed my time, but it didn't really leave a lasting impression on me. I gotta play
Just Cause.
Yeah, and I heard the part two was top 10.
Yeah, that's
games.
Why it became a big deal at part two. I'm surprised you played the part one because it was kind of a stinker of a release. It dribbled out and people were like, okay, cool, you can grapple hook, but the controls were so convoluted that it didn't really catch on.
How long has it been since Just Cause 2? I played part 2.
It's a long ass time since part 1 came out. Just Cause was one of the super early Xbox 360 titles from 2006. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You might have picked up Gears of War on your way after that one.
Oh, never mind. I played Just Cause 2 then. Okay.
Wow.
2010?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that seems about... Yeah, Just Cause 2. That's around that time.
I love that game. Mm. And
yeah,
I've never really shared.
Me either. I thought it was okay. I mean, I didn't hate the game or anything. Anyways, this game... it didn't leave a lasting impression. In this game... The first 20 minutes, you saw me on Twitter, on Skype. I was like, this game is horrible. Like, first you log in, not log in, but you start the game, and it starts with this long cutscene that you have to wait literally like a minute, and then it starts logging in.
Oof.
When it starts logging in, you know, the whole it's like turning on a old laptop.
Good.
It's like
that's how I want to describe my 2015 gaming experience.
It's like turning on my old laptop. And so what it does, right, is that it loads this cutscene about the Rodriguez is sitting there drinking a beer, whatever, looking at something blow up in the distance on the beach. And then after a while, something loads, you log in because you have to log in. So there's some online DRM, which I'll explain a little bit more later. You log in. You can play offline, but when you do play offline, every time you press start, it starts to log in again. Yeah. Okay. So anyways, you're logging in, and then it starts to load the game, because when it loads the game, you can just press new game or continue, and your character will continue from like where he last left off. Because when you finally get to the menu after it loads, after 2 minutes, then you see your character where he was last time in the background during the menu. And then you just you jump right in by pressing continue, which why? I don't care. I don't care about that. I just want to start up the game and go, you know?
Yeah.
What if I want to go in and look at my options? Like, damn. Like, it's every single time, guys. Every single time.
And it really is like 1 to 2 minute load times.
I could try it right now and time it.
You don't have to.
I wouldn't want to tank your computer.
Because a big headline this week was that the Xbox One version was suffering from 15-minute load times. And of course, when reading that, you know, my initial reaction to these things is just not believe them.
Okay.
Because 15 minutes.
I have this on an SSD, okay?
2 minutes on an SSD?
I have this on the SSD. I play my games on the SSD because I hate load times. What's bad about the load times is that this game is seriously dated. All right, I'm going to start the start clock. It's seriously dated. In the beginning of the game, like, it just had, don't you know those old games where constant things over and over and over and over again? It's the same thing with this one. Everything is a damn cutscene. Cutscene.
Before RE4 figured out action game pacing.
Yes. Cutscene, 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 cutscene. And it just feels weird. It takes you out of the action. There's certain parts of the game where it really affects the enjoyment because something, it's like the story was pieced in after they completed the game. It felt like it had some weird development there. Like they did something a step before the story, because there'll be certain sections like that you're like, man, why can't I do this in game? No, it's a cutscene. And it just brings you out of the experience over and over again, because the game is actually not that bad. I actually enjoy it now. Like, the characters are a little goofy. It's growing on me. But
it's funny that they're pushing story and cutscenes so hard. And Just Cause, of all things.
Yeah.
Because I remember the last game, it had really shitty story missions that no one really cared, but I gave them a shot. And it wasn't, I don't remember this problem of the cutscenes being obnoxious, but I do remember the story explicitly not taking itself seriously whatsoever.
Not.
And the whole game being the player's sandbox rather than the developer's action movie.
It is exactly that. A sandbox where you can go everywhere on these huge islands. Okay, it took a minute and 40 seconds to load up.
That is almost 2 minutes.
I forgot you were loading.
Yeah, exactly. It took a minute and 42 seconds, okay? So I was around this, you know, 2 minutes. Yeah, so it would be like, it's unnecessary where you load up the mission, right? And then you hit a cutscene. Mm-hmm. And then you get out of a cutscene, right? And then you walk up and you hit another cutscene. And during all these cutscenes, it's loading. So you're constantly
loading.
You
know what you're about to do? You're about to go from this to the Metal Gear Solid games.
Oh, gosh.
And the first two of those, and the third one in the beginning, is like, that problem, that pre-RE4 good action games with really bad cutscene placement and length.
It just seems like if you're going for that, then why don't, like, I,
yeah, it's just no one gives a shit. Rico Rodriguez, just let him blow stuff up.
Yeah, you have to play to know how unnecessary it is. I guess I don't have to spoil. Like, there's a point where you there's this rocket launches, right? And you're supposed to grapple onto the rocket. You know what happens? As soon as you grapple the rocket, before you even reel in, a cutscene happens.
Nice.
Like,
what happens in the cutscene?
It's just cause. What don't you want to ride the rocket, even if it was?
And in the cutscene, does he grapple to the rocket and ride it with no input from you?
It just cuts all that out, and he's on the rocket already. And he does some weird thing that makes no sense. It just wasn't delivered well. It's really bad. It's really bad, and it's sad because this game is actually all right. You know, I wouldn't say it's really my thing in this day and age. I feel like I've kind of grown out of this. I shouldn't say grown out because that's
the sandbox overstayed its welcome at this point.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you get to blow stuff up, and it's the amount of enjoyment you get out of this game is if you want to do wacky stuff. If you don't want to do wacky stuff, then I don't know if I would recommend something like this to you, because basically it's just boom, boom, boom. Most of the time you're just liberating towns, and it's the same thing. You destroy six speaker boxes and three fuel tanks, and raise the flag, and it just constantly is the same thing over and over again. No difference between any of them other than spongier enemies and attack helicopters that shoot missiles. Like, that is
That's what I didn't like about Just Cause 2 that made me such a weirdo. You're supposed to, like, cable together propane tanks and shoot.
I don't care to do it.
Little trolley cars up in the air and laugh at it, right? But when I was playing, I was actually trying to play the game, which is basically the traditional 7th, 8th gen sandbox checklist game where you go down a checklist of knocking items off your to-do list forever.
It's very dated. The world looks good. The flying mechanics is pretty nice. Like, it's really nice when you get used to some of the controls. I feel like... like, driving just feels weird.
Oh, Just Cause 2 did not have great driving either, and I was the only person who complained about it.
The plane is unbearable. It's so unbearable that I want to unlock flares, because everything is locked behind mods that you have to do, that you have to do the challenges.
Unlock fun mode.
You don't. It's not a side thing. No, you have to do them because you need those mods to unlock aiming down your sights. You have to unlock it.
Wait, really?
Precision aiming. The third.
That's what they call it.
Yes.
So you mean a basic human function?
Yes, Jimmy. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. I was pressing in the stick because it's on the controller layout. It says precision aiming by clicking down the right stick. And I was like, why isn't it working?
No.
And then I found out. Oh, guess what? You have to unlock it after 6 hours of gameplay. What?
Wow.
At least snipers work, but for regular guns, in order to zoom in, you have to... Oh, my God. You have to unlock the... I was like, no. No. It just seems like a dated game. Like I don't know. I'm having fun with it to a point, but it's kind of outstaying its welcome a little bit to me. I see, like, this next island I'm going to, and I'm like, I don't feel like liberating, because you have to liberate three or four whole sections, and that means, like, a lot of towns.
And I love how these games use the word liberate.
Yeah, in order to move on with the story, you have to do those things. You have to liberate at least half of the island.
Liberate as in blow up their infrastructure.
As in kill innocent people. You know what happens? I shoot, like, if you shoot an innocent person, he's like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Like, the whole point of you helping the rebels is that we take it back from the people. That's his exact words. But you're, like, blowing up everything. Like, it's obviously it's not supposed to be taken seriously, but
yeah.
It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't... It just doesn't, you know, when you play a game, it's just like, what were they like? It feels like it's conflicting ideas, and something happened during the development process, and things didn't get not necessarily finished, but didn't get fleshed out very much. It just kind of tossed
it's,
it in.
It's almost
wasn't tested.
As if it would you say it lacks the cohesive, unified expression and vision that might be more easily accomplished with a one man project in Game Maker Pro?
What the hell?
Are you,
is that segue?
I think he's trying to cut you off and segue to me, or maybe segue to himself.
What is the segue, George? Take it away.
Compare that mess of conflicting attitudes and opinions and mechanics to a game everyone's either loving or hating nowadays. Although I'm pretty sure more people are loving it. Jimmy's playing Undertale, and that makes me really excited.
Oh, okay, it was me.
Yeah, right. How are you liking
that
it?
That was Game Maker? Wow, okay.
And it doesn't surprise me. Dust Force was made in Game Maker.
And also Hotline Miami.
Yes, those games are fantastic.
Yes, they are.
All right, I'm going to keep this brief because I'm not going to be the person that I hate.
Okay.
Which is the rest of the internet just spewing
hatred,
spewing details about this and ruining my experience.
Oh, no.
So despite my several ruined experiences, Undertale is great. I am having a good time with it. It's making me smile. The music is fantastic. Muffet is best girl with best theme song. And that's all I have to say about Undertale.
Nice.
Really? That's all?
I'm not going
to
say anything.
Play. I might have to play before I start Metal Gear. I think I just have to.
That's the thing. See, Matt, you
no,
haven't played it?
I haven't played it yet.
Then that is as much as I will say.
Okay.
It is a fun game with some unique things that happen in it. I would recommend it, and that is
it's only $10.
That is as much as I can,
However, I do want to ask you a quick question, just for the personal sake between me and you, and also being super-duper vague for the entertainment of the internet, because it might come out funny.
Sure.
What kind of plays have you done through the game so far? What kind of runs? Where are
I
you
I haven't
at?
Even finished a run.
Okay. Hmm. In that case,
but I know what you're referring to.
Right.
And mine is the I'm going through as naturally as possible with no like deliberate decisions.
Yeah.
And there have been some negative repercussions to my decisions.
Which is kind of ironic because if you know the expectations and the decisions, then that kind of ruins some surprises. The game has in store, but since you're not done, I can't.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Yeah.
Let me
like I.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you because the most I know about it at all is that don't kill anybody in your next run or kill everyone in your next run. Like everyone is forcing people to do these certain types of runs. Is that the way the game is supposed to be played, or can you just do whatever the hell you want?
Yeah, actually,
For the most part, like, again, without spoiling anything, it's supposed to be played naturally, and based on the decisions that you make, it's supposed to, I guess, even this I would consider a little bit spoilery, but it's just, like, it's surprising how much the game takes into account what you do, even to minor things. Sometimes characters will just, like, surprise you with some dialogue where you're like, oh, I didn't,
that they remember
I didn't see
from
that coming.
Your previous run. Like, okay, to be vague, I'm going to say it's one of the few games I've played that actually intends to be played multiple times by saving details of your previous playthrough and using that to alter your next one.
And that I would consider to be major spoilers,
really?
And I would not have said that. Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
right.
Geez, you really can't say anything about Undertale,
right,
can you?
I was going to say very little, but I mean,
pirate games on sale. Now.
Oh yeah,
no,
what's this
we're
about?
Not
this
we're not getting to those yet because I'm just gonna say right now that Fallout 4 got fucking boring and that game is mediocre.
Well, I agree with you, Jimmy. I agree.
I mean, I had fun with it while it lasted.
No, it's not a bad game.
Same.
It's not a bad game. I just don't feel like it's Fallout, is all.
I think I had a conversation with Dan Jones, artist Dan Jones. He's a great guy on Twitter. Because he was saying that a lot of people are complaining about not being able to be evil, and he didn't understand that. And then Todd, Rated S Games, was like, yeah, isn't just killing everybody evil? And yes, just killing everybody is evil, but you never feel like Okay, the story in Fallout 4 is you get to be, like, on that chart of, like, what is it, alignment chart? You get to be lawful, neutral, or chaotic good, and those are your options. Like, I never feel like I can be like, haha, the bad guy. And I've gotten pretty far.
You'll kill everyone and then say, where's my son? Instead of, yeah, fuck it's, my son, I hate that guy.
Like, an hour ago, I was some fucking rando in a town with my wonderful wife and child, and then I get on the other side and I have the option to, like, fuck a bunch of people, which I probably wouldn't do in a real life situation where an hour ago in my time, you know, I was with wife and child. Mm-hmm. Also, you just murder everybody. Mm-hmm. There's a surprising lack of being able to just talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I infiltrate, like, this really, like, super detailed base, like, I told you guys about this a little bit, the Forged.
Yeah.
Those raiders who, like, worship the giant Forge of Iron. Like,
that doesn't happen,
like,
very often.
That's a cool cult that you just walk in and murder. Like, nobody does anything except for shoot fire weapons at you, and that's why it's different. And then you can look at their terminals, and it's like, okay. I would have liked the option to go in and take all these tests that the Forge talk about, like, new initiates, and become one of them, and, like, rise the ranks, and kill the leader, and become leader of the Forged. Maybe set up, like, raider settlements, and coordinate, like, instead of supply lines, supply line attacks or something.
It's not Oblivion, where you get the Dark Brotherhood and stuff like that. This is just... I don't even know what to call it.
I remember one of the first things you talked about was how entertaining that little log is. But imagine how different that would have been in the long term if that was actually a series of side quests you could go through, where you're competing with other Forge candidates and seeing them face these ridiculous punishment deaths.
Like, I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's a group of, I think they're raiders, maybe they're just, like, mercenaries called the Gunners somewhere.
They're huge.
Join them, right?
I remember them being hostile to my character at first sight, which basically means they're wild animals, which is another thing that really bugs me about Fallout 4. All these human beings are wild animals.
There's a similar situation. I'll be quick. When I was just walking, and then I saw a town racing robots.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I as soon as I walk, I'm thinking, like, oh, this is cool. I'm just going to walk into the camp and talk to them. Nope. Instantly, they turned the robots against me, and I started to die. And I was just like, "Why? This is not fault. This is not Bethesda. Like, maybe it is Bethesda, and I just didn't know until now. This is bad."
Well, see, here's the thing: is like, okay, I've played both the previous Bethesda Fallouts, and I played Oblivion and Skyrim. So, like, I'm used to this sort of. You can be a dick and people recognize that, and some people won't talk to you, and some people straight up hate you. Some people become hostile when you do good things, and some people are not hostile if you do bad things. Right. And I don't feel like that's here. I feel like it's, you can join one of the various do-gooder factions and do good. And if you don't want to do that, you can kill people, I guess, but it doesn't really matter. Because even if you murder 100,000 raiders, every raider will still come at you as if you're just fucking Joe. Just like Joe Nobody. They're just like, yeah, it's that dude with the Pip-Boy and the pirate hat. We definitely know him because he's a fucking genocide artist. Doesn't matter. Gonna try and hit him with my spiked knuckles. Like, there's no, like, weight to your character unless you are a good guy. And that feels so bland.
The moment where I was just like, what the hell, is when I got to Diamond City and I went to the combat zone, and I knew that one of the characters are supposed to be in here, right? One of the characters, my companions. And I walk in and they're dancing and they're entertaining or whatever. And then instantly they saw me, they went to go shoot me. And I was like, nah, that's... I'll come back here later. Maybe I have to join the Raiders or something. That's what I instantly thought. I was doing something wrong. I instantly thought. But no, you're supposed to kill everyone inside the combat zone. And supposedly you're saving the bartender and the girl that you're Kate. Yeah.
The person with an accent that I didn't think was real. It's Glasgow. It's Scottish Glasgow accent, and it's she's actually from Glasgow, her voice actor. So it's really? Not a bad Irish accent. Huh. I thought it was a really bad Irish accent. Yeah. I feel racist saying that. I'm sorry to all
racist
Glasgow
against
people.
Irish people.
I mean, against whoever's accent I insulted, but it sounded too ridiculous to be real. But maybe it's just the way she speaks. Yeah. But yeah, I
Fallout,
mean,
man.
I feel like, yeah,
one of the biggest disappointments this year, man. Wow.
I wouldn't say biggest disappointment because I did get a solid 20 to 30 hours it's in
not
one file
in terms
where
of
I
that.
Was having
not
fun.
In terms of a bad game, just like you think that it's going to be a certain thing, but it's not at all.
Well, did you play Broken Age?
No, I did not.
There, that's mine.
That's yours? Was that this year?
Yeah,
wasn't
that's
that like
mine.
Last year or something like that?
Well, part one came out last year, part two came out this year.
Oh, that's the Double Fine thing, right?
Yeah. I also
played all the previous games, by the way. So it was part of my life for about 2 months. So that's why.
That's right. Yeah. You did your Road to Fallout 4.
I like doing the roads because I you just collect all this information about what Fallout really is, and then you go there and you're like, holy crap! And that's why it's kind of one of my biggest disappointments. But not a bad game. Mm. I mean, it's not a bad game. It's not for me.
It's a really slightly above average game that I think
is getting blown way out of proportion for what it is.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
like
a 9.
I didn't like Skyrim as much as I liked Oblivion, but it was after like the honeymoon phase, it kind of had the same thing where it was like a letdown, like getting to the end of the Thieves Guild and then grinding these like procedurally generated identical quests over and over that were like shitty. And I feel like there's a lot of that in Fallout where it's just like this stuff that's like blander than the last version. Not bad, but like I would prefer New Vegas. Mm.
There is, but I think if I had to be objective and compare just the vanilla experiences unmodded of Fallout 4 and Skyrim, I think I actually enjoyed Fallout 4 more. Than Skyrim.
I might be inclined to agree with you.
Because Skyrim had no hook. Fallout 4 has a main quest that begins bad, but it really hooked me in the midpoint.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I agree with that.
And that's,
Skyrim's main quest was boring.
As similar as these games are, Skyrim just never really got me hooked on a story level. And then on a mechanical level, I got hooked by Fallout 4's economy and town building, which is still like the most stupidly executed part of the game, but for whatever reason that makes fun happen, I was having fun with it. And
I think I'm one of the outliers who I started off like to everyone else in the town building where I was like, oh wow, this is cool, like this is gonna take my life away. And then like maybe 3 hours of town building in, like I cleaned up the town, made some beds, built a radio beacon, and then I was like, yeah, I don't really fucking care about this.
But Jimmy, don't you want 90,000 bottle caps?
Not really, because...
Oh, you're so lame.
Well, I mean, specifically for my character, the only things that I would want to buy is armor or a fist weapon.
One Punch Man.
Fist weapons don't fucking exist, because this game is stupid. They include all this shit to give your guy, like my guy's fucking overpowered. I had to turn the combat difficulty up because it was so easy. Because my guy was just fucking destroying everything.
You really were one punch man.
I really was.
You were frustrated
there was
at how easy
that,
it was.
There was nothing that didn't bored. Fall in a single punch. And it's true. I turned up the difficulty and even fucking like bosses were still like pretty mediocre. But they were like finally like, okay, decent challenge. But then like I found 3 fist weapons my entire playthrough, and like not counting like finding several pairs of knuckles. Like I found 1 boxing glove and 1 power fist, and it was a power fist that always drops from the same monster that you go by in the story quest, and I haven't found anything else.
What are the mod options like for the fist weapons?
Well, pretty limited. It's literally like you go down the tree until you get the most damaging thing.
The more good,
like,
gooder one.
Like literally, they have subtleties on them that don't fucking matter. The knuckles is like, oh, you get spike knuckles and that does more damage. You get like, what is it, like crusher knuckles or something, and it does slightly less damage, but it has a chance to break armor. But it's like, if you're fighting people with your fists, you're like, you're not going to hit them enough times for that break armor to even fucking matter. If you're going to be doing like one or two, three, four punches, and still that break armor is not going to matter. It's going to give you like an extra like two damage per hit. And then you get to the bottom one, and it's like bleed effect and most damage. There's like it's objectively the best one. There's no reason to get anything else. Same thing with the power fist. You get to the bottom one, does the same amount of damage, but it splits like 30% of it as energy damage. And it's like, yeah, there's no reason not to get that. Like, there's no subtlety with the fist weapons, which I guess is the point, but I think the only thing that has really made me feel super good about going fist weapons is, did I tell you guys about the time where I suplexed the guy?
No.
No.
So there's a special animation for unarmed, and I've only triggered it once in 30 hours.
Oh,
but
no. Great.
That was a worthwhile 30 hours because I kid you not, was fighting some dudes. I VATS this guy. I was behind him. I think that's what you need to do. VATS from behind with unarmed. And went to the animation and it stuttered for a second. And I was like, what's this? And my guy grabs him around the waist. And I was like, yo.
Yeah,
and then my guy fucking backbends and smashes the dude's neck into the floor. And I was like, yo.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
And like, see, it's like, I had fun. But I don't feel like I want to play more Fallout 4 to the extent that I was playing it. Mm-hmm. Like, my next file is going to be, like, science and energy weapons and shit, and I'm going to make Gordon Freeman and, like, try some different perks, but I don't know if I want to continue the file that I'm on, because I just don't feel like any of the story options are how I want to proceed, like, me as a person. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, which good guy do I select? And I don't really care for that. I want to do something. I don't know. I usually go something weird. I usually like.
You don't want to be sarcastic?
Yeah. You mean like. Yeah. Even the sarcastic, it's just like Han Solo. Like, you're never actually bad. Mm. You're just like kind of a dick, but you still help everyone anyway.
It kills me that all they say for that button is sarcastic.
I kind of like that just because it's a surprise when you get to hear the thing, because sometimes it's actually funny
by the thing.
I mean, all your options mean the same shit anyway, so
yeah,
what matters, right?
Matter at all.
Sometimes one of the options is goodbye, but only when you're talking to vendors.
Yeah.
It also like kills me that the vendors have maybe an unsure
yeah.
options.
Why does that exist? You do that and then they're like, well, whatever, come back when you have money.
Your guy says, okay. I'll think about it later.
It's just goodbye.
It's
all it is.
A different version of goodbye. You have three goodbye buttons and one bye button.
Sorry for ranting about Fallout 4 again. I know it's fucking ages old. It made me mad that it got boring.
Well, we just had
I'll try different stuff, and maybe being a guns guy will make it more fun.
We just had a spoiler talk, so we're pretty fresh on it.
Yeah.
Are you totally sure that you don't want to talk about how you bought like 20 pirate games on sale?
I will touch briefly on the fact that I bought about 20 pirate games on sale.
Because that sounds weird. That's,
well,
should we worry about you?
I mean, I don't. Okay. It's already a topic, so I will say I'm planning a video series that has to do with pirate games.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Therefore,
that
when the Steam sale went up and all these pirate games went on sale, I was like, wow, I didn't know there was this many fucking pirate games on Steam. A lot of the ones that I bought are very, very awful looking. And so I'm excited to take a look at these absolutely trash pirate games.
Yeah, I was about to say, there really aren't that many good ones. Like, Assassin's Creed 4 really broke ground by being kind of like the first quality AAA pirate game ever, which is ridiculous. What else is there? Sid Meier's Pirates, and that's really like the only good one I can really think of.
Yeah, well, okay.
Risen,
like,
maybe?
I have like a little bit of like looseness on the pirate thing just because I do want to play some good games. So like Assassin's Creed, like the ones that I assume are going to be good. Black Flag, what's it called? Sid Meier's Pirates. Shantae and the Pirate's Curse, I'm assuming is pretty good. Secret of Monkey Island, I'm assuming that's pretty good as well.
Yeah, those all technically count.
It just has to be like mainly pirate themed,
right?
But then I have great shit like Nightmares from the Deep, The Cursed Heart, and the two sequels to that, The Siren's Call and Davy Jones. I have The Guild 2, Pirates of the European Seas. This one looks great right now. Caribbean Odyssey. This game looks like the most fucked up, who the fuck thought of this shit game ever. Caribbean Odyssey is the one that I'm going to have some fun with. It's like a gravity platformer where you're a pirate. It's super weird.
Oh, I'm ready.
I'm Googling it, and what is this?
Right? You'll see some videos on these games in 2016, because I got a lot of work until then, but trying to make it a good and interesting series, so hopefully it works out.
Wow. Videos by Jimmy.
Finally, yeah, sorry.
No, I'm going to make videos this year, spider. Every month. Dude, look out for Jimmy. No videos. I know that struggle.
I made a few.
You were too busy getting paid super well to make Defend It. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
That'll teach him.
Mm-hmm.
just move on.
Do we have anything else that we did this week before we get into news? Because we also have 2 weeks of news. Some of the stories are more interesting than others, I guess. But most of them are interesting, I swear, I promise.
I mean, I didn't really do anything else.
Yeah.
Undertale is probably the biggest thing I did this
week.
And
it breaks my heart that we can't talk about Undertale. Can we talk about Undertale after everyone's played it?
No, I'm not going to.
You want to ruin the experience for
everybody?
Yeah, we can
have a special spoiler cast.
If we do a specific podcast that's just like, if you want to listen to this podcast, it's only going to be about Undertale and spoilers, maybe. But I will have had to play through the game several times before that happens, and I don't know if that's going to happen soon.
We will find out in the future.
After the break.
Hello.
Hello, and
I messed you up.
Yeah, Matt's on that future
what?
Shit.
No, I was just like, you know when you stumble into a room and trip over yourself and catch yourself and pretend that you're cool? That's how cool I was just now.
And welcome to Back to the Podcast. Hello. There, I caught it.
Good.
You saved it with a super cool looking slide, an action roll. Yeah. Into whatever pose you meant to strike beforehand.
TOVG listeners, I expect an animation of that stat.
He also pulls out beer when he flops back up. It's like...
and everyone just laughs and is like, okay,
you
Jimmy.
Bought beer.
Someone high fives him.
So,
beer's pretty good.
We got 2 weeks of stories to talk about. The first one on the list is something from long, long ago. It is a story that had me mildly excited and mildly apprehensive, and I got in a lot of trouble on the Friends cast for my opinion on this one. Are you guys ready for some shocking, hard-hitting punditry truth?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
There are going to be PS2 games coming to the PS4, which is like, cool. Yay, they're emulating it, running it about 4 times the native resolution, twice the frame rate, according to a Digital Foundry test.
Right.
And currently, though, they only apply to some Star Wars games that were bundled with Battlefront, which is, of course, very limited. But, you know, of course, mm-hmm. the implication is that they'll roll out support in greater numbers in the future. The question being how and also how many, and also the great $1 million question being, can we just put PS2 discs in the machine? Because I'm sure you guys, if not everyone listening, has a bunch of PS2 discs lying around collecting dust, because that console was huge. It was the most popular video game console in history.
Yeah. Yep.
And actually being able to, even if it is 2 generations behind, being able to support PS2 games on PS4 would have me genuinely excited. I could have a Metal Gear Solid 3 machine again.
Hmm.
And, yes.
I mean... I didn't own a PS2. My brother did, and he sold all his stuff, and I don't own a PS4. So this is not relevant to me.
Oh.
I sound like a Twitter replier.
Oh.
Whatever you're saying, it's not relevant to me, so why'd you say it?
I don't care.
Some of us can't purchase PS4s, George. Why are you even talking about this?
Because the PS2 was literally the number one most popular game ever.
Okay, so what was your opinions that were so...
My opinion that was shocking was that I felt like I would really want to, and maybe kind of sort of feel deserving of that disc option being there, because that is what the competition is ordering or offering. Mm-hmm. Not to a super great extent, but the Xbox One is pushing out software emulation of Xbox 360 games where you can put in the disc, download a patch, and go. Xbox 360, you put in a disc, downloaded a patch, and go, and there was a lot more support for it than you get in this gen. And the early models of the PS3 had native hardware backwards compatibility with PS2, which was a great feature that they rolled back on because they'll just make more money that way. Like it's stuff that they are capable of. Like I could put a PS2 disc in my computer and play it probably about as good as whatever solution they'll end up rolling out, because I won't have to pay $10 for it on the on whatever digital store they are probably going to end up putting these games on. Like really putting the disc in there is the best case solution. But if they're also using emulation rather than ports, then it's also a viable possibility as well, because the same data stored on the same disc is what they're going to be emulating software side when you download.
Yeah.
Wii U can go back to Wii. It's like no big deal really. And
backwards compatibility thing always bummed me out, because like, I feel like if you want to milk money from your fan base, allow them to return your old console for a little bit of credit at GameStop so that they can buy your new console. Because a lot of them are just not going to buy your new console because they're like, well, I paid $300 for this one. I don't want to get another one already. Like,
It's a real selling point.
Backwards compatibility so they can continue playing the games that you marketed so hard at them that they probably love. Like,
I'm a little jelly of the X-Bone, because if I had an X-Bone, I'd have an MGS3 machine again once they roll out the patch for one of the most popular games on the Xbox 360, which was the MGS HD collection.
Yummy.
I mean, I would assume that support for that one would roll out eventually. Meanwhile, I could put the PS2 disc in my computer and emulate it, kind of shittily, but I could still get it done. It just seems like it's a service that should be expected.
I thought when I was buying the Metal Gear Solid Legacy Collection, I was like, oh man, it's going to be for the PS4, and then no, it was just for the PS3.
No,
I would have loved to have like the backwards compatibility just to play on my PS4, because my PS4 is already hooked up. I have to go in back and blow off dust off my PS3 that I haven't touched since I played Uncharted 3, and I have to hook that up and stuff. At least it has HDMI out and not like component cables, so I'll be able to record. But still, I would have rather played it on my PS4.
It's just more convenient.
The other thing too is like, I feel like all these companies are like, DRM, we don't want piracy, blur. But like, if you don't want people to pirate games from the previous generation, let them play them on the current generation of consoles, so then people could just acquire the disc and use that disc to play the video.
Service
game.
Problem.
Yeah.
You want them to. Service problem.
Yeah, but Liam told me that takes more. It would take too much work. That they'd have to charge for it, and it
got really
mad. Already
charging fucking $400 for the stupid brick.
It doesn't fit.
And I really do feel like backwards compatibility is a feature that customers should be more demanding of for console gaming. Like that's something that could really give them a leg up above alternatives like PC gaming. And like I was saying, Sony's competitors are working out competitive solutions to this problem. I want to pay into it. I don't want to pay too much for it. That is how capitalism should work.
Yeah.
Anyways. So yeah, this is something I would be happy about until my mood was soured by finding out how wrong I was to want to be happy about the best case scenario situation I was drumming up.
Yeah, it's a minor victory.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like a hooray, they did the thing that they should have done already.
The games being on a digital download market is better than them not being there at all, but
it's
it still
Nintendo
feels like
victory.
Kind of a slap in the face, because I know I'm going to have a lot of those games on my shelf right now. On my dusty old PS2 hooked up to a shitty CRT TV. Granted, I could go over and play them right now. That is technically an option, but it's 2015 and that doesn't really feel like an option.
Yeah, you missed my joke, but I said it's a Nintendo victory, because they're doing a thing where you're like, yeah, it has decent online. 10 years after everyone else does.
Also, this is something that even bugs me about the Wii U, because it has backwards compatibility for Wii games and also GameCube too, except they don't officially support that feature because I guess they don't want to either sell more consoles based on how much more appealing that would make the Wii U.
It has backwards compatibility for GameCube?
Believe it or not, I don't know how the physicality of the disc drive would work, because GameCube discs were little tiny babby discs, remember?
Yeah, they were weird.
But you could still stick them in Wiis and play just fine.
Yes.
The Wii was almost identical GameCube hardware, and so when they worked out their backwards compatibility solution for the Wii U, I'm assuming that a lot of similar hardware is involved. They already have a Wii U emulator going out right now, because it was so easy to... make it after the Wii emulator mm-hmm. being so complete already. But you can flash a Wii U with some firmware out there on the internet to load up disc images of GameCube games and play them fine.
I see.
Wow.
So I mean, on a more realistic level, if not put the disc in, they could still basically put the disc images of GameCube games on the eShop, and it whatever code these hackers are running is basically all they'd have to copy paste in their back end and have a similar solution going up. And, you know, they're a real company. I would assume they'd be better at it and also push it out actually for once, instead of just leaving all this money on the table to burn.
I can't imagine the NX, you know, the Nintendo's next console being having backwards compatibility for GameCube, Wii, and Wii U, and have the graphics to boot. Can you imagine?
I don't think it is.
You imagine if that were to be like their, like, haha, you know, moment, you know, like that's competition.
For those of you who bought all three consoles, fuck you, because here's all four consoles in one.
That's a little bit like what the Wii U felt like as it was leading up to launch, because that was before the PS4 and Xbox One were revealed. It seemed that they had finally released something that was meeting up with the concurrent generational standards. Oh, wait, 1 year later, the next generation after that begins.
Anyways, we should. Speaking of the next generation, there's some Portal stuff coming in Rocket League in a DLC.
What does that have to do with
It's the future.
Yeah, so it's something. I was really excited. I was hoping that Valve was going to make a game again. I got some press releases saying official Portal Rocket League crossover coming in December, and I was like, cool. But as it turns out, it's like cosmetic items that you just kind of stamp on your car. You got a cake topper, propulsion gel, rocket trail.
Valve not releasing games and instead putting out cosmetic items for games that are already out?
Yeah, I was genuinely shocked and surprised. Come on, man.
I'm kidding. I mean, I play Rocket League still every now and then with my friends. All this upgrade stuff is usually for DLC, but most of the friends that I have that play Rocket League are like, yeah, I don't even use some of this stuff. I just buy the DLC because I want to support this really fucking good game. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a cool thing. Probably not taking away from the development of Half-Life 3, I'm assuming, but
development in quotes.
You know what I'm talking about. I'm saying I'm sure none of Valve's manpower is leaking over into the Rocket League team for these assets. Just some cosmetic stuff. The only thing I'm sad about this is that I don't see any indication of like a Portal map or like some sort of like Portal mode.
Yeah, picturing that sounds like a good idea though, like shooting the ball through portals as a stupid gimmick mode. It would be a pretty new way to play, fun, quirky way to play Rocket League, I guess. Yeah,
they do have the companion cube as a modifier for the ball, so you can so that seems pretty fun.
So the model will still be round?
No, they actually have modifiers in it right now for the free update they did. There's you can do a square. I think you could do a triangle or like a pyramid.
And it
maybe
will...
hang on. I know you could do a square and a ball right now, and the hitboxes are square.
Whoa.
Huh.
It's very hard to play with the box. Super fucking hard. It's so hard to predict.
So that
where
means
the
you can
go.
Slide it on the floor.
Yes, you could also turn gravity to like above where you, which allows you to jump, so you only stay on the floor. It's very funny. But anyway, yeah, Rocket League stuff. It's a good game.
You guys remember, speaking of the glory days of the PS2 and how crazy successful it was, remember Katamari Damacy, right?
Yes.
Right?
Of course.
As like the poster child of how what would be an indie game nowadays was basically a regular AA mild release for big publishers back then. Anyways, there is a new trademark for a new Katamari game called Tap My Katamari.
Oh, yeah.
Which you can imagine what that means. Well, I mean, it's already a double entendre, but tap, I'm assuming touch screens are involved. I'm assuming they're going to start Katamari on cell phones, which could be horrible. But in terms of brands, they could resurrect for cell phone games. It's not the worst. I could easily imagine just rolling a ball around a map from an overhead perspective with my finger.
I mean, in my personal opinion, anything would be better than that god-awful, what was it, the one on 360 where, like, to run, you had to, like, mash your control sticks alternating mash up and down super fast. Oh. Like, if you just tap to get yourself running, that'd be great. Also, what's the word on this possibly maybe being something on the Wii U? Because that would be fucking tight.
It would. Wii U games in general would be fucking tight. There's really nothing on it, though. It's a generic video game license that they filed a trademark for. Literally all it is a name right now, and then legalese about what a video game is.
I would buy that because I really want to play a Katamari game.
Well, yeah. What if it turns out to be where literally all you can do is tap my Katamari? What if it's basically like a Hero's Clicker, where you tap to stick more junk on your Katamari as time goes on, pay a little bit of money and more junk flies
Shut
on
up,
your Katamari.
George.
No, okay. I thought you meant for the Wii U. No.
Yeah, and there's like good room for a good cell phone Katamari game if they mix up the mechanics and controls a bit. But
yeah, I would play cell phone Katamari. That is actually Katamari, not a clicker game.
Dragging a ball around with your finger, fine. Literally just tapping the screen over and over again. No.
Speaking of which, I don't know if this is by the Katamari people, but it's pretty much exactly a Katamari game. Have you guys ever played The Wonderful End of the World?
The Wonderful End of the World.
That name brings back memories of like 2007.
Wait, The Wonderful, you added on, or that's...
No. The Wonderful End of the World.
The Wonderful End...
Oh, God, it's at the tip of my... I know that name. I know it's towards some cute, quirky, colorful game. I just cannot complete the picture right now.
It's literally a Katamari where instead of a Katamari, you're like a human shape thing.
Yes, 2008.
It's a pretty old game, but I like that game. It's essentially just Katamari, but
there's not enough Katamari clones. Bring us more Katamari clones.
Yeah. I'd take a fucking sleek looking indie Katamari clone.
The Wonderful End of the World involves a marionette that grabs as many objects as he can before the end of the world. It has often been compared with Katamari Damacy due to their similar gameplay. Yeah, see, there you go.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Tap my end of my world.
Wonderful tap.
So this is the stupidest segue ever. Speaking of games made by Namco.
Good one.
Yes, their trademark on loading screen minigames has expired. This is a
fuck them.
Pretty simple story. Bullshit, extremely dubious trademark on a gameplay mechanic made after that gameplay mechanic has already been done before in outlier cases and has been done again by other companies since. They've just never had the balls to actually go to court over their bullshit trademark. But presumably more companies will now feel safe enough to put loading screen minigames in games. What kind of loading screen minigames do we want to see, guys?
I mean, did I say it on here? Maybe I said it somewhere else.
Maybe.
Those fucking Fallout Pip-Boy games need to be in the loading screens.
Yeah. Classic example.
That's like, I don't want to play them when I'm in the game.
No.
I want to play them when I'm waiting for the minute.
You
want to
play Fallout 4
loading.
When you're in the game, not Danky Kang.
What's the ink game? What's the Splatoon?
Splatoon.
Don't you do a mini game?
Yeah, you do.
That's matchmaking, not loading.
Oh.
Really? Is that how they got around it? Because
I'm assuming it's not a loading screen. You're waiting for other people to join up into your lobby.
Like throughout history, there are examples. The eShop, it's not a game, but it does have a loading screen minigame. But the reason why you don't see them more often is due to legal fears surrounding this trademark. They also have, Sega had a trademark on the arrow that floats in your HUD above Crazy Taxi.
Yeah, I read through some people linked me. There's like two different lists of like the most ridiculous game copyrights, like of like functions. And there is some really shitty ones, dude. There's some the ones that are like, so you put text in a box and you're saying that that's original. That's like your design. Like there's, I can't recall any of them right now, but I was angry at pretty much every single one of them.
It's like, it's like trademarking a car chase scene in an action movie. If cars chase each other to cinematic camera angles to cause excitement.
TM can't explode unless you're Michael Bay.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Matt, what's your quickly sloppily thought together example of an on the spot pressurized loading screen minigame you want to see?
Every time I think about a mini loading screen, I think about the Dragon Balls being smashed together. That's like a very basic thing. But I always liked platformer mini games. You know, like a quick little platformer thing, you know, like kind of like, it doesn't have to be like Poppy Jump or anything like that, but just like, I just like the basic, you know exactly what to do mini game, you know. But yeah, I would like to see like, don't you know when there's these little things in games that you don't really get to see, but you could put it inside of a mini game. I don't know what a good example would be, but you know, like a little scene, maybe give a little story. It'll be interesting to see what people come up with. So you're always doing
at least
something.
Now,
yeah.
That's the thing. At least now, finally, since the mid-90s when the trademark was filed, developers can at least try to be creative about that. Like a lore quiz in an RPG. Let's just see how that would work. Maybe it would succeed. Maybe it wouldn't.
You know what would be cool is in an RPG, especially where this would be fun, is like do something to where you can get super minor benefits during the loading screen. Like do like if you fast travel or something with like a party and it has to load, have it like your main character and the other characters are like playing cards in the back of the wagon or something, and if you like win cards against your party, like you get a bit of gold or something, you know, or like some sort of stat boost or like increased friendship with party
super
members,
temporary
like,
time buff.
Just like a little thing.
Travel, right? Like the loading screen is you traveling, like stuff like that would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
you
also
Oregon Trail-esque kind of float across the river, but you gotta do something.
The method du jour is loading screen tips, and I get super tired of loading screen tips super fast.
Well, because they can never write enough of them to where you don't see the same one twice after one day
of endeavor.
Play.
Why do they try? Yeah. I just don't like loading, really. I want to sit back and relax during loading times.
Like, there's a couple in Fallout that were like I said, the one that was about the town being destroyed by a sea monster. That's, like, interesting. But, like, stuff like, the Death Claw is big and scary. Ooh. Like, you already showed that to me in, like, the first quest of the game.
Remember when
I don't
when
need to know
Duke
that.
Nukem Forever came out and it had a loading screen tip that said press the jump button to jump? And people couldn't tell that it was a joke because that's how bad it gets sometimes.
Yeah.
They just have to write something, anything. Why not write behind-the-scenes facts about how the game engine works? I would rather read that than the Death Claw's big and scary.
Yeah.
Instead, like, Fallout 4 has 50,000 individually placed baseballs.
Yeah, that's like at Six Flags Magic Mountain, the theme park that's like about an hour away from where I live. Mm-hmm. Under the big coaster, their like flagship coaster, Goliath, in the waiting line, they have signs that say, like, Goliath was built with, like, X amount of ridiculous feet of steel. And so
and
you're
like,
oh, wow, that's really interesting.
Cool.
Like,
you learn
it's
while
nothing...
you have fun.
Yeah. Teach me about chemistry, let's say. How about if your intelligence perk... your intelligence stat is high enough in Fallout, you get more actual sciencey tips in the loading screen.
I was about to say, having actual facts about like real life nuclear science would be a bottomless source of quirky. They could throw in dark humor in the loading screens.
Yeah,
it would seem kind of out of place, but after reading the Deathclaw is big and scary so many times, anything's better. An RE2 remake is for reals happening. It was earlier reported that Capcom was doing a remastering and that they have since confirmed that was an issue with translation. It is a legitimate remake, presumably in the style of what?
The translation thing. I just, oh, yeah. Okay.
I thought you were going to laugh because I think I'm the only person here who cares about Resident Evil.
You are.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to play it. Sorry. I'm going to play it because I've never played part two.
You should definitely start with remake or remake.
I'm
break
so
out
confused
your GameCube.
Now we've talked about Resident Evil remake.
The closest I've come to the Resident Evil series was watching the third movie.
Oh gosh, that is a bad entry. Oh my gosh.
So instead of literally playing the most polished, emblematic example of survival horror as a genre, you watch the third movie.
Yep.
Ooh, okay. Introduction.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got that hot chick in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mila Jovovich.
Yeah.
Yeah, got her. She's cute.
Jordan Underneath did a video on that first movie. It's really good. You should go watch that.
Time interviewed Nintendo's new president, Tatsumi Kimishima. Ooh.
Yes.
God, people always get angry at me when I have to pronounce Japanese stuff.
You actually did that one really well, though.
I had to think about it and stop and collect myself and gird my loins.
Because
if I had gone any faster, I would have accidentally said Mr. Butthole Pants or something.
Yep.
So I actually skimmed through this just before we started, and a lot of what he's saying is kind of markety fluffy filler, but there is some interesting speculation, not hard facts, though, but some interesting speculation, a little bit of light shed on their mobile strategy. And a lot of what he talks about is pushing rewards points programs onto people's mobile accounts with the Nintendo account that they're rolling out in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
He says, for my Nintendo, you'll get points in traditional ways, like through the purchase of software, but we're also looking at non-traditional ways of getting points just by accessing our content wherever you may find it. And you'll be able...
Or loading screen minigames!
Full circle.
Dude, of all the companies who are going to try to start experimenting with loading screen minigames, Nintendo might actually do it best!
I mean, they have one in Smash already, but that's because Nando Bamkai, whatever they're called, did Smash as well, so...
What's the loading screen minigame in Smash?
You get to practice against Sandbag.
Oh, right. But now I don't know what's a loading screen minigame and what's a matchmaking minigame anymore. Yeah. Oh, it's complicated.
That one's loading screen for sure, because you have to matchmake with someone and get into the game before you can start.
Either way,
that.
It's good. I was playing Street Fighter with a bunch of friends the other night, and on an online lobby with Street Fighter, you have to wait for one-on-one matches to end. You just sit there and look at the list of players, with the bottom people going up gradually as the matches keep...
There should be a training mode
it's
in
really
between
boring.
That.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be training while waiting for my match.
That's literally like best. I would actually prefer that. Like, okay, I want to train this move real quick in between matches and you use it in the match. That would actually be brilliant.
You don't even... That's not even a loading screen minigame. That should just be the game.
Oh my gosh, they need to do
it's
that.
It's a fucking no-brainer.
I won't buy it until they do that.
But anyways, back on topic, he wants people to get reward points by accessing their content wherever they might find it, and you'll be able to use these points in some way or other to get benefits at places like theme parks, or perhaps when purchasing merchandise. So
actually, that makes sense, because they were planning on doing some Nintendo stuff.
Which is something that sounds super cute and cool and amazing. Exactly. I'm really, really happy about the possibility of Nintendo Land being in real life someday in the future. To grow up in these days. I'm super jelly of whatever kids get to have that much fun. But it sounds like Nintendo's mobile strategy is pushing rewards points programs alongside merchandising, with this guy still tossing the word theme park or words theme park throughout this interview quite deliberately. And it sounds legit. I guess it's hard to tell.
Studios 30 minutes from my house, so I think that's the one that they're planning on doing Nintendo stuff at. Unless they just fucking do Nintendo Land, like IRL.
By itself in the desert, which would be in Vegas.
Neat as fuck. I mean, I'm close to that too, so fine by me. All I want for them to fucking do is put a Pokemon Center store in Los Angeles. I've been saying this. They have two in Seattle. Two.
How the hell do
they have two? And those are the only ones in the US.
Okay, that's really weird.
And I think one of them in Seattle downgraded to just being like a one of those big vending machines. Fucking
like the Best Buy Expresses you see at the airports.
Yeah, yes, but with Pokemon merch in it. Just give it.
This is a super weird way to be looking at it, because when people are thinking about Nintendo's mobile strategy, they're thinking about games on mobile, but it seems more like they're wanting to push social apps on mobiles instead of games. I guess they'd still be doing the Degra. Is that what the company's called? There's some sleazy free-to-play game company that they're marketing with and are pushing out some... What's it called again?
Diva.
Like a pop singer?
I think so.
Interesting.
Oh, no, Dina.
Dina, that's the one.
Because I'm thinking the fucking new Overwatch character.
Yeah.
Diva.
But their in-house stuff, it's just clicking on Mii's and getting
deals. I think one place they can definitely start is give us a couple of Facebook sticker packs. Because I use that shit all the time.
Do you?
Yeah, Facebook stickers are fucking hilarious. Okay. Have you never used them?
No.
I never
get on Facebook. I just sit in my underwear and play video games.
You do Facebook chats with people. I have a couple group chats to keep in touch with my groups on there. There's just like a little smiley face at the bottom. You click it and you can go into their sticker store where everything's free. So I don't know why it's a store, but you just download these packs of like some internet like meme-esque character.
You're buying them with Facebook privacy points.
Yeah, but it's just like the character in a bunch of like different like hilarious situations or facial expressions. And some of them are actually really fucking funny. Like there's this one that I've been using a lot. And it's a businessman, but his head is a full entire fish, like the fins and tail and top. His whole head.
He's one
is
of
a
the
fish.
Great old ones.
Yes,
coming back from the city of Rust.
Anyway, sticker packs, Nintendo stuff, please.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes. He also says that they're not done with the Wii U. They promise.
Good, because I'm not planning on buying the NX.
Yeah,
so
he said some pretty words about how he wants customers to be satisfied.
Thank you.
I mean, it's going to take more than pretty words in a Time interview, but okay. speaking
last
of
topic.
We're doing the traditional Nintendo heel face turn reversal again, where one story earlier they're the plucky underdog trying to pick things back up again. And this story, Nintendo are the evil corporate overlords who scared the Project M team into ceasing development and scraping their websites from download links.
What?
I mean, you say that as if Nintendo like knocked on their door and was like, it's a nice mod you got here. Shame if something happened to it, but it's literally the story is the Project M people being like, yeah, I think it's time.
It's
a choice then.
The implication is that they knew someone inside Nintendo who was telling them that the company was fed up and weren't going to go the cease and desist route. We're just going to straight up sue them. And they had a lawyer who they were talking to who was giving them very scary numbers about how they could be charged $15,000 per every line in every change log released in every version of Project M. And the team was just like, no, we're teenagers and college students. We don't want to deal with this. But again, like that's all the implications. A lot of this is coming out in community forums. The website, the official website right now literally says almost nothing. It basically says it's time to stop. And that's all. But community members of Simps come out to clarify things that this did involve them being scared of a lawsuit, which did not happen. A cease and desist did not happen as well, but yeah. Due to legal scares, they pulled the plug at some point. And one of the developers anonymously leaked a new version that they were developing up to that point when they scrapped it, and a new, more anonymous development team is now building on top of that one called Project M Evolution to keep the dream alive.
I mean, personally, I think after 6 years of supporting one game, I think, like, that's enough time to, like, be able to call it quits and move on for any game.
Well, with a fan project like that, don't they rotate people in and out, or just have some guy who cares about it a whole lot doing it as his hobby on his free time?
Not really. As far as I heard, it's just the Project M team has been working on it the whole time. I don't know. I mean, I don't keep up with Project M very much, but as far as this goes, I think I'm glad that they pulled out before something bad happened. I don't know what Nintendo would have done. I mean, we all know Nintendo Japan's not super great with legal stuff. They're not very forgiving. They're not very understanding. I would like to see these guys make their own something, whether it be fighting game or whatever the fuck, you know? And I would like that to not be, taken away by the fact that they get sued.
I mean,
so
the silver side
I'm happy about
of
this.
The coin of these fan games always disappearing is it's just the internet. There's always a backup copy on like 7 different websites elsewhere.
Oh, I mean, like they have the Project M has been at tournaments. People have this shit everywhere. I'm sure it's going to peer to peer.
It is now basically Project M Evolution as far as the layman should be concerned. Mm-hmm. And also the other side is that developers have more free time to make more original projects of their own. That is how Terraria happened. It started out as a Mario fan game that I loved, but got taken down.
Mm-hmm.
But is still available on CNET.
Yep. So I don't know. I look forward to seeing what Project M devs, guys, whatever, if they decide to make a game from scratch, I look forward to seeing what that's about.
All right.
Yeah. What if there might be two good Smash clones in the world at that point? Two good PlayStation All-Stars clones. Everyone loves Rivals of Aether for capturing that classic PlayStation All-Stars feel.
Featuring Dante from the Devil May Cry series.
DMC.
Let's end on a reasonable chuckle like that. You know, I was playing Earthbound on my cell phone over Thanksgiving.
Right.
And I found three like Mexican stereotype people in the desert wearing ponchos and sombreros. You walk up to one of them and he says, "I'm Big Brother Poncho." You talk to the next one and he says, "I'm Little Brother Pincho." And then you talk to the last one and he says, "I'm Thomas Jefferson." See, it's like just such a wonderful little reasonable chuckle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love that. Ugh.
For a second there when you started, I think me and Matt both thought that you were looping back into the start of the podcast.
That's exactly right.
Thought we were just going to Groundhog Day this shit for the rest
of
eternity.
Because you said it like before.
I just wanted to end on a nice little comfortable, reasonable chuckle. Yeah.
If you like to end your day on a comfortable, nice, reasonable chuckle, share us with your friends. Don't share us with your mom. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes. And I think that's the pitch, right?
Thanks, Jimmy.
You can find me on youtube.com/sundergamer or Twitter at sundercr. Matt, where can we find you?
youtube.com/mattvisual. Input the bush into Crunchyroll now and get 2% off.
We're not sponsored. Stop it. But if Crunchyroll wants to sponsor us,
hit me up. All right.
I'd rather do Crunchyroll than like Mountain Dew and Doritos.
Whoa.
I mean, I was actually thinking about this recently. I would rather do, well, I guess like Crunchyroll is also falls under this, but if I do sponsorship stuff on my channel, I just want to do something that's completely unrelated to games.
Exactly.
Because I feel like it's much easier to just be like, by the way, also, I like to drink this beverage or whatever.
Well, it's ironic because Mountain Dew and Doritos are not directly related to games, but they have like become there is
a
stigma
mimetically
associated.
Related.
And that's weird. Man, the future's weird.
Yeah.
The future is beginning now, right after this podcast.
See you later, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Wow.
See you.
A little depressing. You got to put a little bit of life into that.
I've never been good at ending things.